Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another Bike James podcast. In this podcast, I'm going to talk about a subject that most people really don't like to talk about or think about, and that is mountain biking injuries. I came across a study that was done in 2017. I've included a link to the study in the show notes so you can see it for yourself. But I forget exactly why, but I was researching some sort of injuries and I came across this, and I was surprised because I'd never really heard about this study. And again, this was just a few years ago and it had some pretty interesting stuff in it. But I just realized that it's not the kind of thing that the cycling media in general is going to pick up on and report on. And so most people have no idea that this type of information even exists. And so I think a lot of people tend to look at this in a negative way, right? They don't want to talk about injuries because they feel like that's casting mountain biking in a negative light. Why would we tell people, you know, the bad stuff? It's such a great sport. And while I understand that, the problem is that the data is useful in helping us to spot trends and possibly look at ways where we can change injury patterns and reduce some of the injury patterns that we see. And so if you look at it from that standpoint, then it's very valuable data, and I wanted to share it with you guys and some of my takeaways from it. So again, like I was alluding to earlier, I think a lot of people tend to look at these reports with almost like a fatalistic approach of like, well, that's just how it is, and there's nothing we can do to significantly change things. And so again, this leads to the like, well, just bringing it up and talking about it isn't going to help. And so what's the point? You know, it is what it is. We're just going to enjoy riding and let the chips fall where they may. But again, you can look at it and say, well, what if people are getting hurt at a higher than normal rate? You know, is there something that we could be doing wrong that's leading to that? And again, that mentality is what led to the revolution and like the barefoot running movement. I mean, it's been quite a while now. But again, before the book Born to Run and your Vibram Five Finger Shoes and the that whole movement came along, before that you ran in these big cushy shoes. This was the way to do it, and you would lengthening the stride and all of these things that we now know aren't good for the human body and were leading to overuse injuries. But and again, I was part of this because I ran track and cross country in high school and college. And so I wore these kind of shoes. I suffered from the injuries. I was told that I needed orthotics and different types of insoles. And so again, people knew that there was this really high rate of overuse injuries, higher than, should be, because it's costing people training days. And really the human body is pretty resilient. So we should be able to train and do something without breaking down from it. And so people were looking for solutions, but what they were doing was looking at small changes to the status quo. So again, like, using orthotics and different insoles and stuff like that versus a paradigm shift in looking at how we're running. Like, is how we're running, is the equipment and what we're telling people to do helping to contribute to this injury rate? And I think that's what the barefoot running movement was about and helped to find out, was that yes, that there is a point where how we're doing things can be contributing to the injury patterns that we're seeing and the rate of the injuries that we're seeing. And so by changing that paradigm and looking at things completely differently, then we can change that injury rate and injury pattern. So I think the same thing can be done by looking at this report and seeing what we can glean from it. And so I will tell you, I'll kind of, as we're going through it, you're going to detect a pattern and I'll sum it up at the end. But I definitely think that there are some things that the cycling industry and mountain biking industry in particular is getting wrong. They're getting wrong with the equipment and the techniques that they're recommending, and they're getting it wrong with how they're promoting our sport to new riders, and that these things are leading directly to the injury patterns and the rate of injuries that we're seeing from this study. Which again, this was 4 years ago. In the last couple years, mountain biking has exploded. So you can just imagine that these numbers are, you know, continuing to grow. Like, this is affecting even more people now than it was back in 2017, which I forget exactly what the numbers were, but they had talked about, I think it was like 8.3 million people in 2015 were considered mountain bikers. And so I can imagine that number's just gone up, right? So these findings and what we're going to talk about are affecting even more people today than they were when this report came out. So, all right, so let's get into it. So right off the bat, what I'm going to do is I've got a couple of major points, and then I'm going to dig into some quotes. I've got some quotes from the study sharing some of the data, and then I'll have a few, you know, thoughts and points on that. But so that's kind of how I'm going to go about this. So the first kind of overarching point that I got from the report or the injury study here was that mountain biking has a higher than average rate of injuries in general, and it has a higher rate of head and spine injuries and overuse injuries in particular. So what this means is that mountain bikers as a sport suffer from a higher rate of injury than average when you look at other sports, and that when you break down the types of injuries that we're incurring, injuries to the head and spine and overuse injuries are at the top of the list. Like, they are, or not necessarily at the top of the list, but they are higher than normal, way higher than normal for what you would find in other sports. So starting out, some of the quotes from the report here. So one of the things that was apparent over and over is that a lot of the injuries occur during races. So, you know, this quote starts out with almost a third of injuries occurring during a race. Mountain biking is among the sports leading to high overall injury rates in Olympic sports. During the 2012 Summer Olympics, 21% of mountain bikers reported acute or overuse injuries, half of which led to cyclists to lose at least one training or race day. So that was people, participants in the 2012 Summer Olympics, the riders who are participating in that. Breaking it down from there, at a recreational level, 50% of recreational riders and 80% of professional mountain bikers have reported at least one major severe injury directly related to the sport. That's pretty high, okay? Micro-traumatization, which is just a fancy word of, like, you know, tissue damage, of contact and non-contact areas due to repetitive forces and vibrations, in addition to fatigue, renders the rider vulnerable to overuse injuries. Such injuries, the overuse injuries, are reported in 45 to 90% of mountain bikers. And this is one of those things I never quite understand. You know, I know they're looking at different studies, but I love when they have these giant gaps, right? 45 to 90%. Like, that's a huge difference. But 45, even if you look at the low end, you know, 45%, that means that, you know, almost 50%, right? If you've got 10 riders in a group, odds are five of them have had some sort of overuse injury. And up to nine out of 10 riders can have had an overuse injury. So they do note that their injury-related cost of care for cyclists can be a significant financial burden for cyclists and the healthcare system in general. But they do say that the potential risks of cycling are outweighed by the health-related benefits of riding a bike. But I did find it interesting that they felt the need to actually point out that we're getting hurt so much and at such a rate that it can be a financial burden for us and the healthcare system, right? So, you know, the takeaway point from that is that we are suffering from injuries at a higher rate than normal. So again, going back to what I talked about earlier, well, is there something that we're doing, right? Is there an approach that we're taking that's leading to this, to these patterns that we're seeing? So leading on to the next quote here, the most common mechanism of acute severe injury for competitive mountain bikers has been falling forward. Okay, like 65% of acute severe injuries for competitive mountain bikers has been falling forward, with 85% of such injuries having occurred while riding downhill. Okay, falling forward has led to a significantly higher injury severity score and emergency department admission rates than falling to the side. right? So that would make sense. Like, if you're going to fall, if you fall to the side, then you're, you know, you can still get hurt, right? Break a hip, break a leg, break an arm. But that's much different than the head. And so going over the handlebars, especially when you're riding downhill. Now, again, they point out downhill riding, but later on they refer to also this as what you do in bike parks. Okay, so you can include bike park riding in this, and you can also include, I would argue, enduro racing, because enduro racing, you're getting timed on what tends to be more downhill type terrain. And so you're pushing your speed on the downhill part. And so in my opinion, again, the bike park is something they talk about, but I'd also include when you're really pushing it in a race for enduro riding, that you also would fall under this. The odds are, if you're going to crash, that you're going to go over the handlebars as opposed to just falling to your side. Again, that makes sense, right? Given the context of how you're riding and all that, but it is something to consider. It's not just thought. It is a significant number. Like I said, 85% of acute severe injuries have occurred while riding downhill from falling forward. So another quote from the study: head injuries lead to concussions, skull and facial fractures, cerebral contusions, you know, brain bruises, and intracranial hemorrhaging. Again, that would be like, you know, bleeding on the brain. So yeah, you know, bad stuff. I say this all the time, right? But like, you know, one of my thoughts on this, and I'm kind of going off subject just kind of for a second here, not really off subject, but the amount of head injuries from falling forward, I believe, is directly related to the use of clipless pedals. I'm not saying 100%. Like, I've had a buddy who went over the handlebars and broke his neck, and he was riding flat pedals. So I am not saying that it's 100%, but clipless pedals do contribute to the severity of going over the handlebars. Again, like when I coached Aaron Gwynn, he was riding cross country, clipless pedals, went over the handlebars, couldn't get his feet unclipped, and knocked his two front teeth out. All right. So, I mean, one of the best riders in the world, and this happened to him. And so the idea that clipless pedals don't contribute, if you're going to go over the handlebars, right, clipless pedals are not designed to be disengaged while you're going forward like that, right? Like, they're designed to be disengaged laterally. So you twist your foot laterally. If you're falling to the side, then you're going to get, you're twisted laterally. So you're going to disengage much easier falling to the side than you are going over the handlebars. But if the vast majority of your crashes, especially the ones that are going to lead to severe injuries, are taking place going over the handlebars, well, then any system that is going to make it harder for you to protect yourself and, you know, contribute to the severity of that, you know, it's contributing to it, right? So again, it's not 100%, but it does increase the chances that you're going to end up smashing your head. And so this is why I've always, you know, said, like, you know, people are like, oh, you're going to, you know, clipless pedals and flats, you know, they're the same thing. You're going to, you know, crash in one and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, but the injuries aren't the same, right? If I crash and I get hurt on flats, odds are going to be that I smacked my shin with my pedals and I've got a really bad gash, maybe something that needs stitches. I broke my arm or I popped my shoulder or something like that. But if I get hurt with clipless pedals, the odds are much higher that it's going to be a head injury. And those are not the same thing. Okay, so like injuring your head is a much more severe area of the body to hurt than anywhere else. And so, like, yes, neither system is foolproof, but pretending that the risks are the same, that a system like clipless pedals, which is going to increase your risk of, you know, not being able to get disengaged from the bike in time to avoid hitting your head when you're going over the handlebars, like, that system doesn't have the same risk to benefit ratio as flat pedals, which is going to contribute to, you know, again, your feet come off the pedals and you bounce and you get thrown off the bike. Okay, odds are you're like something else is going to get hurt, but it's not the same thing. So head injuries are nasty, right? Like that was kind of the point of that last sentence is, you know, concussions, skull and facial fractures, brain bruising, bleeding on the brain. Like those are severe life-changing things versus I broke my arm or I popped my shoulder joint out of place or something like that. Okay. So it's, dental trauma has been reported in 25% of mountain bikers. When they have a head injury, there was, the statistics are there for how much this occurs and how much of a problem it can be. All right. Also looking at spinal injury. So that was just kind of looking specifically at face, right? Hitting your face or head in general. And then spinal injuries. In the study, they talk about 107 cases of acute spine injuries in mountain biking in a level one trauma center. And 95% were male, right? So kind of unsurprisingly, it is a male-dominated sport, but it's not 95% dominated by men. So obviously, men tend to do more foolish things than women on their bike. Again, I don't think that we needed science to tell us that, but we do have some statistics to back it up. So interesting thing here, only two of those 107 cases were professional cyclists and injured during a race. All right, so even though a lot of injuries are occurring during races, it was kind of interesting that they don't tend to be severe spine injuries. And I think that, you know, professional cyclists, one of the things they know how to do is they know how to crash. All right, you have to know how to crash before you can go fast. And that's something that a lot of people don't really learn, like taking tumbling and, you know, things like that, making it part of your program. Because if you don't know how to crash properly and you start riding really fast, then the odds of you getting really hurt when you crash are higher. So I think that that's one of the things that we're seeing there. So mountain biking spinal injuries consisted for almost 4% of all spinal injuries. That's kind of crazy, right? If you think about all spinal injuries, and mountain biking made up 4% of that number, which is, you know, relatively high when you consider how many people are mountain biking. It's not that big of a number. Cervical spine injuries were diagnosed in 74% of cases, so basically in the neck, the C spine there. 84% of riders had used helmets and or body armor. So the majority of riders that ended up with spine injuries were using some sort of protection. 15% of patients also had a documented coexisting brain injury, basically meaning that like they had a brain injury along with the spinal injury. So what was interesting again is the ISS, the injury severity score, did not differ significantly for people with helmets and people without helmets. So again, basically, like even though most of the people were wearing helmets, I think most people wear helmets in general, right? But if you ended up in the hospital with a spine injury, then if you had a helmet on versus not having a helmet on, there was not a significant difference there. So again, that's not saying not to wear a helmet, but I just found that kind of interesting. So, you know, those are kind of the specific like head and spine injury areas, some of the statistics from that. And again, I like the takeaway from that is that going over the handlebars and injuring your head or spine is a very real possibility. And so you need to do things that are going to help mitigate that, right? One of the things, like I mentioned, is not wear clipless pedals. Like they are dangerous. They are not designed to disengage as readily going over the handlebars as they are sliding out. Again, if you think about like a road rider, they're not going to go over the handlebars very often. Okay, so for them, it's not as big of a deal. A cross-country rider, which we're going to get into here, because there were some significant differences between cross-country riding and downhill. But, you know, knowing what you're doing and the odds of what kind of injury you're going to have, and then, well, what can I do to kind of prepare and mitigate my chances of, one, doing that, and two, if I do have that happen, how can I try and minimize the chance of incurring a head or spinal injury? Because again, you can break and injure almost any other area of the body and it will heal and you will be okay eventually. But man, you bust your head and you've got problems for a while, maybe for the rest of your life. So, you know, you want to, you know, try to avoid that. So moving on to kind of some of the overuse injury stuff. And again, I talked about this, the numbers, right? And just how 45 to 90% of riders are going to suffer from some sort of overuse injury, which I don't think is normal, right? The human body is very resilient. And so kind of breaking into some of the specific things beyond that. So it's ulnar and median neuropathies. Okay, so cyclist palsy is another name for it. That's the ulnar neuropathy. That's basically like the tingling in the hands, the weakness in the hands. It's present in 19 to 35% of cyclists. So not uncommon. But again, I think that one of the problems there is that we're looking at how do we try and fix the status quo instead of looking at this differently. And one of the things that you'll find with most riders is that they lack good upper body strength and stability, and they also lack the specific type of wrist strength and stability that they need to support themselves properly on their bike, you know, through the handlebars and being able to apply weight and pressure properly through their handlebars. And so, you know, I've talked about this before and the importance of using like Indian clubs and the steel mace and these leverage-based type training tools, because they build the type of wrist strength that you need for the specific demands of mountain biking. And so if you don't have good wrist strength and wrist stability, then you're going to find these soft tissue areas and nerves and things start to suffer. And so again, I believe that that's the problem. We do have a high rate of problems in this area. And this is why you see the winged grips, right? Like that is, they become so popular because this problem is so prevalent, and the winged grips are one way to help with the problem, but they're not fixing the problem, right? You know, another contributing factor to the problem is handlebars being too wide, and you know, again, the whole wider being more stable is just not accurate. There's more to it than just your stability at the top position of, you know, what's essentially like a push-up, right? Your ability to move through that range of motion is important as well. And your hand position being too wide is going to make it difficult for you to apply pressure properly through your handlebars and move properly. And so there's a couple contributing factors to that, but it is a problem, right? I just mentioned that there's some of the specific overuse injuries that we suffer from, and maybe what can we do to get better with that. Knee pain is prevalent in 20 to 27% of mountain bikers. So, you know, a good number, but not like off the charts sort of thing. So I found that kind of interesting, because knee pain is one of these things that you just assume is like this really high number. And, you know, that is something we need to worry about. And again, I think this goes back to clipless pedals and sitting and spinning so much, and how sitting and spinning is not good for your knees. It doesn't matter what kind of bike fit you get, and that clipless pedals don't allow good foot support and proper foot function. And so this leads to a lot of these lower extremity problems that we see. So knee pain being one of them. Another one is neck pain. And this is another one of those numbers that was kind of all over the place. It was 16 to 43% have neck pain or have had neck pain. So, you know, this is, again, part of the sit and spin, right? If you're sitting down, then you're having to raise your head and look like what would essentially be looking up, right? Like imagine having your head in that position while you're walking around during the day, okay? Like you'd essentially be looking up at the sky, you know, and walking around like that. Do you think your neck would hurt if you had your head in that position while walking around? Well, yeah. So why is it not going to hurt when you have it in that position when you're on your bike, right? We don't see it that way because we're leaned over. So our head is still, you know, our eyes are still level with the horizon. And so we don't feel this imbalanced position between our head and our body and the spine and all that. So we don't think about it that way, but it's the equivalent. So it's a bad spot. Like sitting down and looking up is not easy on your neck. So this is a reason why I recommend standing up more, because when you stand up, besides, you know, like the knee pain thing, when you stand up, you get a co-contraction between your quad and your hamstring that stabilizes the knee at the bottom of the pedal stroke. You cannot get this while you're sitting down. No matter how great of a bike fit you've had, you're going to have an unstable knee joint at the bottom of the pedal stroke because you don't have the pressure at the foot and the full extension and co-contraction between the muscles to stabilize the knee. And so standing up is going to help stabilize the knee. Standing up is going to also allow you to put less stress on your neck, right? Because when you stand up, now you can look forward more naturally. And so this is going to, you know, directly lead to less stress on the neck. So the sit and spin mentality really has a lot of downfalls for us. I think you see in these overuse injury patterns over and over and over again, how sitting and spinning and all the time leads to these kind of overuse injuries, because it's such an unnatural position for us to be in, especially trying to apply force through it. So standing up more can help with that. They do talk about how clipless shoes provide cyclists with a mechanical advantage. Again, this is compared to normal flats, not the catalyst pedal that I designed that allows you to put pressure through the whole pedal. And so that mechanical advantage that clipless pedals get over a normal flat pedal is simply because, you know, the reason your toe is pointed down is because your foot is wanting to roll off the pedal. And so by attaching your foot to the pedal, you can lay down more force and not have your foot go flying off the pedal. Whereas with flat pedals, especially small flat pedals that don't allow you to get that full foot support, you're going to be limited eventually with how hard you can pedal with that unstable force wanting to knock your foot off. So compared to a normal flat, I would agree with that statement, but it's not true compared to a better designed flat, because you want to stabilize the energy going into the pedal, not just strap your foot to an unstable platform, right? And that's basically what clipless pedals are. But they do talk about how the clipless pedals do potentially expose cyclists to some injuries, including metatarsalgia and Morton's neuroma. So basically that freaking crazy hot spot that you can get in the middle of your foot, super painful, right? So they're just acknowledging that clipless pedals contribute, well, potentially in their words, but you know, that's they potentially contribute to some injuries like that compared to flat pedal shoes. Low back pain, this is a super common complaint. 24 to 41% of all riders had this one on their list. And so, but again, like this is directly related to sitting and spinning. When you're sitting down, you're leaned over like that, you're just not in a very functional position. Okay, you're not able to engage the core properly. You're not able to engage the hips properly. And you're trying to run all this force and all this, you know, pressure and stuff through the body in this position. It's going to lead to problems. All right, so the bike fit is not going to fix it. If bike fits worked, we wouldn't have such a high prevalence of injury. And then they would work, right? Like you would get your bike fit and it would be done. But that's not what happens, right? Something else starts to hurt. And then you got to go get that fitted. And then something else starts to hurt. And it's because they're just covering up the problem, which is crappy position in the first place. Like sitting down and trying to run a lot of pressure intensity through your system is going to lead to problems. So again, like it's not stand up all the time. It's stand up during hard efforts. And if you sit down to recover and you stand up for hard efforts, you're going to find that a lot of these overuse injury patterns are going to go away, especially this next one, right? Genital area numbness and erectile dysfunction are two of the most common chronic injuries of the genitourinary, the groin area in male cyclists. And man, there was a list of just crazy stuff that you you know, comes from that. So the genital area numbness comes in at like 50 to 91% of riders. So 50 to 91% of riders will be suffering from this problem, genital area numbness. And then 13 to 24% of riders reported erectile dysfunction, well, male riders at least, right? So female riders also did have a problem with it. Basically, like if you want to look at the statistics, like or the specifics, I mean, they just name off a bunch of problems that you get from this, you know, that come along with this. But again, why is this happening, right? Like, why did 50 to 91% of riders have this problem? I'll be honest, I don't. I've never really had this problem. I mean, I did when I first started riding, because I would sit and spin all the time. I would sit and try and grind. And when you're sitting down, especially when you're pedaling hard, you're using your groin as a wedge point, right? So like you're wedging your feet and your groin, you know, into the, you know, your groin goes into the seat, and then your feet are going into the pedals, and you're creating pressure, and that pressure is what allows you to move the pedals. Well, if you stand up, that pressure point on the other side of the wedge goes from your groin to your hands. And so now you're using your hands and your feet together to create the pressure to keep the pedals moving. So you're not putting a ton of pressure on your groin and your genital area. Yeah, the statistics back this up. Your groin does not want to be part of a wedge. Okay, so if you stop doing that, then this will go away. Like, I don't own a single pair of chamois, you know, padded shorts. I've not had this problem. I've gone on, you know, multi-day rides, right? I've gone for 6, 7, 8 days in a row, 2, 3, 4 plus hour rides every day. Okay, so this isn't a matter of not being able to go for long rides or multi-day rides. I can do that. And what was ironic on these rides is that inevitably, you would end up with some of the riders who would develop, you know, groin issues and have to start using a bunch of the chamois butter. They'd use it anyways, but they'd start getting saddle sores and other problems. And I didn't have these issues, and I'm not going a lot slower than them either. Right, but my strategy for riding was markedly different. Whenever I would hit a hard effort, I would stand up, then I would sit down to recover. Stand up to go hard, sit down to recover. Whereas they would sit down and only stand up if they absolutely had to. They would try and sit down for every effort, hard, medium, easy, and only stand up if they had to. So they were constantly putting pressure on this area, and then this would cause problems. So there's another approach to this that can directly lead to lower injury rates in this area. So I, you know, this one just really, when I tell people about this, like, this should be the number one reason why people are like, all right, standing pedaling, right? Like, all the other stuff that comes along with it, it's more fun. You're going to go faster. It's easier on the body in a bunch of different areas. But man, the fact that your groin is not going to be suffering is, it should be like right there, the selling thing. Like, okay, anything that will allow me to ride without having to suffer from genital area numbness and possibly erectile dysfunction, I'm going to do, right? So again, you can see the injury pattern. Well, what can we do to possibly change this? And standing up more is one of those things that we can do to change that. So that kind of brings to conclusion the first point, which is that mountain biking has a higher than average rate of injuries, and especially head/spine injuries and overuse injuries. And I think that there's some things that we can do to help change those patterns, okay? And another thing here, the second overarching point, is that downhill riding/bike parts are significantly more dangerous than cross-country riding. Again, I think this is one of those things that's like, you know, duh, but it's interesting and kind of sober to have some statistics that back up and say, oh, wow, like there is, when I'm, you know, riding downhill or being more aggressive. Again, I would even throw in enduro riding on some level here, because if you are pushing the downhill side of things hard, then, you know, that could be considered under this banner. Like, you don't necessarily have to be at a bike park or, you know, riding shuttle runs on a downhill bike in order to put yourself in the kinds of situations that lead to these scenarios. So one of the things that they noted was that when you looked at the injury rate, one of the studies, when you looked at the injury rate between downhill and cross country, the injury rate seemed to be similar. But when they broke it down to injury rate per 1,000 hours of riding or 1,000 hours of exposure, then the rates changed significantly. So, for example, the rates were, you know, 7.5 for female cross-country cyclists per 1,000 hours of riding, and 3.1 per 1,000 hours of riding for male cross-country cyclists. But when you look at the downhill side, the injury rates were 46.8 per 1,000 hours for females and then 42.7 for male downhill cyclists per hour. So this is a significantly larger number, right? I mean, we're talking 7.5 to 46.8. I mean, that's almost 40% different. Same thing. I mean, both of them are basically almost 40% higher than their cross-country counterpart. So it is just something to keep in mind. Like, downhill riding is significantly more dangerous. Now, linked to this is, again, and I'm going to quote from here in this study, an emerging trend is the growing number of mountain bikers attracted to mountain bike terrain parks, which facilitate the DH rides and provide the cyclists with a variety of technical trail features, leading the riders to spend more time riding downhill at high speeds. Mountain bike terrain parks have become a common location for mountain bike injuries, where the overall acute injury rate for recreational mountain bikers is reported to be as high as 15 in 1,000 exposures, with 87% of injured riders being male. So again, just talking to how we tend to do stupid things in general, but put us on a bike and we will do that too. During the 2009 biking season in a mountain bike park, 86% of injury visits to a local emergency room center were male, and 52% of cases were visited between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. Interesting, kind of after lunch, right? Like, so, just something to keep in mind, right? Like, maybe taking a break and coming back and not being fully mentally into it or whatever. But, definitely that is kind of interesting how over half of them were between that 1 to 4 p.m. Time frame. So moving on here, upper extremity fractures consisted of 74.2 of all fractures, and 11.2 of all patients had traumatic brain injury. Almost 9% of patients required transfer to a higher level trauma center. So again, going back to this traumatic brain injury thing, that's quite a high number of people who are admitted into the emergency room, a high percentage. So predictive factors for increased risk of mountain bike crashes include prior history of crashing, which is interesting, riding in the dark or in a group, which again, riding in the dark could be obvious there, but riding in a group, people tend to push themselves a little bit more. riding errors, trail conditions, obstacles, fatigue, and poor weather are also among the most commonly cited causes of injury. Riding downhill at higher speeds and competing in mountain bike races also are reported as predisposing factors. For recreational riders in mountain bike parks, riding unfamiliar bicycles and being faster than usual can be regarded as an injury risk factor, while jumping, using safety equipment other than helmets, I don't know what the heck that means, and using a new bike increase the risk of hospitalization due to trauma. So, in a nutshell, mountain bike parks, there's a lot of different things that can contribute, right, to injuries. But mountain bike parks definitely have a lot of those things, and they contribute to that. So, again, that kind of is the end of that second point. And you can just see that, like, statistically, riding downhill is significantly more dangerous than cross country. Now, what does that mean? I love downhill, right? Like, I joke around, like, the climbs are just a necessary evil to get to the fun part. Like, people think that I'm fast at climbing. I'm like, I hate climbing. I just want to get it the hell over with so I can get to the fun parts. So I love downhill. Free ride, downhill side of things is definitely what attracted me to mountain biking in the first place and where I lean more towards still. So this is not me saying, like, don't ride downhill. I don't think that that's it at all. I think that what we're not doing anyone any favors, though, by not saying, hey, this is a much more dangerous form of mountain biking than just going out for a casual trail ride, and trying to present it as just a different type of riding without explaining the risk to people, I think is irresponsible. So I think that that does help contribute a bit to the high injury rate and things that we're seeing. So, all right, so kind of conclusions here. I've got a couple points to bring this to an end and, you know, see what you think about them. I've talked about these things already, but just kind of like bringing them into a summary here. So again, this is just my opinion, but I think that one of the big takeaways that we have from this is how clipless pedals and the sit and spin mentality are leading to much higher rates of injuries than needed. So those two things, and they're intimately tied together, because clipless pedals are inherently unstable and very uncomfortable to stand up and pedal with. And so you tend to want to sit down more when you're riding clipless pedals, because instinctively you don't feel as stable and it's not as comfortable a position to be in, versus having a pedal, you know, a flat pedal, particularly like the Catalyst pedal, that supports your foot and allows you to stand up. And so standing up is a much more comfortable, much more enjoyable experience. And so clipless pedals contribute to the sit and spin mentality, because that is one of your best strategies if you're going to use clipless pedals, right? But clipless pedals aren't better, so you know, why put yourself in a position that's going to lead to higher rates of injury? So clipless pedals, they contribute to the severity of over-the-handlebar crashes, and they increase the chance of incurring a head or spinal injury. And they also contribute to the overuse injuries from poor foot support. So clipless pedals right there, like if we got rid of clipless pedals, you would see a lot of these things change. You would see the rates of head and spine injuries. Again, I'm not saying all of them. Okay? I know two people that have had freak accidents. You know, one guy broke his neck. One guy broke his spine. You know, a guy that broke his spine, there was a tree that had fallen across. Ironically, it was at a bike park. A tree that had fallen across the trail. And he hit it with his chest. And he hit it hard enough to actually sever his spine. And, you know, he's a flat pedal rider. So I know, like, I don't want anybody to misinterpret what I'm saying. I'm not saying that if you ride flat pedals, you are immune to these types of injuries. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that you lower the risk. You lower the chance of it happening. And so if you had more riders using a system, flat pedals, that have a lower risk of incurring this type of injury, you would see a change in the injury pattern, all right? Both in the amount of head and spinal injuries that we see from an acute standpoint, and also the overuse injuries that they cause from just the poor foot support, how they don't allow your lower body to function properly because you can't use your hips properly. There's all things that go along with that. And so along with that is the sit and spin. And so sitting down more than necessary, especially during high tension efforts, okay, when you're having to create a lot of tension in the body for a hard climb, a hard sprint, things like that, you want to stand up, because not doing that leads to overuse injuries, especially in the groin area. Okay, so by using flat pedals and standing up more to ride, you will help to avoid some of the most common injury patterns seen in mountain biking. And a second point is I think this also speaks to how dangerous it is and kind of irresponsible for the mountain bike industry to promote our sport, especially the downhill / bike park and, like I said, even the enduro racing scene, to people who aren't ready for it, and to not speak about the real dangers of this kind of riding and the need to be better prepared. And again, obviously, to tell people that they need to be better prepared, you have to be ready to tell them that they're not good enough right now, which, again, in today's atmosphere, is you just don't do. So I think this also contributes to it. Like, one, it's money, right? Like, you look at what is the sexy side of mountain biking. The sexy side of mountain biking is downhill. It's, you know, the free ride, the, you know, Red Bull Rampage type stuff. Like, you know, this is the sexy side of riding. Like, when you see marketing people wanting to use mountain biking to sell something, they're generally, again, not all the time, but generally, they're going to feature some sort of downhill rider or a jump or slope style or something in that area. So, you know, this is just This is the sexy thing. And so if you're trying to sell a sport and you're trying to attract people to come check it out, like, well, you're going to promote the sexy thing. You know, hey, you know, check out the downhill riding, check out the bike parks, check out, this, you know, enduro racing. You know, this is what you want to do. And people are like, yeah, I want to do that. So cool, sign me up. But if you're not also explaining to people that, like, hey, like, yeah, this is a great sport. This is a great way to spend your time on a mountain bike. Well, one, it's not the only way, right? There are other alternatives, you know, trail riding and stuff's fine. Again, I think that, you know, that gets promoted. I'm not saying it's all just downhill. But I'm just saying that when you aren't explaining to people that there's a difference, right? The risk to benefit ratio is different. So like the risk of you getting hurt going to the bike park, especially if you've never done this before, you're completely unprepared. You just started riding like 3 months ago. You're still, you know, a little overweight. You're out of shape. You don't have very good skills. But man, you're going to the bike park because you just hear about how like this is the cool rad thing to do. And everybody's doing it. And so you're going to go, you know, that is the recipe for disaster that lands people in hospitals, either themselves or other people, right? Because these are also the riders who can injure other people by, you know, crashing into other riders or crashing and then like, you know, staying on the trail or not knowing to get their bike off the trail. I had a buddy who got wiped out with something like that. A guy crashed. And then just left his bike on the landing. And my buddy is a blind landing and, you know, hits the jump, sees the landing. There's a bike there. Boom, wakes up in the hospital. Right. So these people are dangerous to themselves and others. And we're not doing anybody any favors by pretending that this isn't so. So we need to do a better job of explaining to people that, yes, there are risk here. So you do, this isn't just road cycling on dirt, right? I guarantee you that if you looked at the injury patterns between mountain biking and road riding, that you would see some similarities, but you would see some differences too. And it's in these differences, especially, you know, the over the handlebars, the head and spine injuries, you know, these are the things that we need to take. I think that we need to look at and say, how can we change these patterns? And so besides our own riding style and the equipment that we use, we can also look at how we're promoting the sport to other people, right? Like I think there's a lot of well-meaning people who like drag people out and get them in over their head because they're just not thinking about the fact that, man, what we do is dangerous, right? It's fun. It's we're out in nature. It's beautiful. You're you know, with your friends. It's awesome, but it's dangerous. And I don't think that just saying that and then saying, okay, how can we be better prepared? This is also where, you know, my push for getting people to be more aware of carrying medical stuff like a tourniquet, you know, some quick clot and some gauze and a compression bandage, some basic things to help control bleeding. You know, just being aware of some of these things because what we do is dangerous and we're not doing anyone any favors by just promoting the happy fun side to try to sell more bikes and not, you know, creating better prepared people and helping to do what we can to lower these injury risks and stuff like that. So anyway, so that's it. Like I said, I've got the link to this study in the show notes so you can look at it yourself and draw your own conclusions. You'll notice that there's a lot of things that they said. Like I pulled out anytime there was a number, I pulled that number out, right? So they did talk about like, you know, oh, you know, bike fits, you know, are, you know, blah, blah, blah. But they don't have any numbers as far as like, you know, people that got a bike fit, you know, had this percentage lower overuse injury rate or anything like that. The people who followed the saddle height calibration or, you know, so they had some quote unquote recommendations in here. But like I mentioned earlier, one, they didn't have any data. There was no data to say that, like, yeah, these work, right? But it's also all it was is small tweaks to the status quo, right? It's not a paradigm shift and like, well, are we looking at this wrong, right? Like fundamentally, you know, like changing to flat pedals and standing up more. Like that's a fundamentally different way of looking at riding a bike than what the people – most people, and especially the people who wrote this study, how they look at it. And so again, and you can tell that from the suggestions that they made on how to fix it, because they're all within the current cycling paradigm of clipless pedals, sit and spin. Like, you have to do these two things. So how do we try to massage these things to stop producing these insane injury rates and the patterns that we're seeing? So I do encourage you to check the study out yourself, but keep that in mind when you're reading it and you see them say, hey, you know, do this. Where's the data? And all it is just a little bit different twist on what we're already doing and not really a different way of looking at this. So yeah, maybe I'm wrong, but I can tell you from my own experience, you know, riding, using all the stuff and trying to ride the way that you're told to, having the back pain, having the neck pain, having the knee pain, Achilles tendonitis, you know, just all the stuff, right? And it goes away when you start to change how you approach riding. Sitting and spinning and using pedals that are too small or, you know, clipless pedals are bad for your body. So change that and you're going to change a lot of these patterns. So anyways, if you want to learn more, you can check me out at bikejames.com. You can sign up for the newsletter there, get a free isometric training workout and mobility workout, two things that will help change your strength and your fitness, which will also contribute to lowering your rates of overuse injury and also acute injury. Just remember, muscle is the best armor that you can have, and the more mobile you are, the less likely you're going to have something ripped and torn if it gets, you know, stretched into a weird position. And I've got a lot of other podcasts and articles and videos and stuff on mountain bike training that you can check out there. And then also check out pedalinginnovations.com, and you can learn more about the Catalyst pedal, which is the world's only pedal that is designed to allow your foot to get the support that it needs to function properly. So it allows support at both the front and back end of the arch, allows for balanced energy transfer into the pedal. It's just a much, much better way for your foot to interface with your bike. And one of the most common things that we get from people using the Catalyst pedal is how their injuries have gone away, right? Their knee pain, their low back pain, their, you know, foot and ankle pain. You know, these things go away because they allow your body to move in a more natural way. So again, like, they can help, a better designed pedal is something that can also help contribute to changing these injury patterns. And so if you find yourself suffering from some of these things and you've tried a lot of the common things, you've tried the bike fits, you've tried the wedges, you've, you know, tried the new shoes, tried all the different stuff, and you're still suffering from it, give the Catalyst pedals a try. Got a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's the only product in the cycling industry that has anything even remotely close to that, because that's how strongly we feel about our product and how much we'll back it up. So if it doesn't work for you, send them back. We'll give you your money back. No questions asked. You beat the crap out of them, right? It's not even like one of those, I forget the name of them, right? But you had some grip that came out and they were trying to do some money-back guarantee, but you basically had to return them in the package. Right, like, it's if you use them at all, they wouldn't take them back for a return. That's not what we do. Okay, I mean, we have taken back pedals that were obviously just beaten to crap. It's like, hey man, I'm not it. You know, I want you to be happy. If you're not happy with them, then we'll take them back. But the vast majority of people don't send them back. So if anything, they end up ordering more. But again, you can learn more at pedalinginnovations.com and find out more about the science and everything behind that pedal. So that's going to do it for this podcast. Again, hopefully giving you some things to think about. Remember, this is about empowerment, not trying to scare you, right? When you know what you're facing, you can be empowered to prepare for it. And that should lead you to be more confident versus having the just kind of, you know, blissful ignorance that most people have both on and off the trail, and just hoping that things don't go against you, right? So anyways, yeah. Be better prepared. Hopefully this will help you do that. And I will talk to everybody next time.